Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Andrew, it's kind of a two good, one not so good, all combining to make our good martini today.
It's a mixed drink.
It is a mixed drink. We've got our first poll out on the runoff in Louisiana. Granted, it's an internal Republican poll, so the number might look a little rosier for Bill Cassidy than some independent polls might suggest, but the margin certainly gives us the indication that he's in very good shape, 56-40 ahead of Mary Landrieu. If that weren't enough, Mary Landrieu, of course, has been trying to convince Senate Democratic leaders and succeeding to put the Keystone Pipeline suddenly on the agenda, where they didn't have time to put it on there any time over the past 6 years. And so they're finally giving her what she wants. They're going to have a vote next week. Not to be outdone, the House Republicans are having a vote on it today. Bill Cassidy, her opponent in the runoff, is going to be introducing that. And so I guess you kind of count that as a wash maybe in the runoff. But bring in President Obama to deliver the decisive advantage for Cassidy with this whole thing. Because as we joked about earlier in the week, not thinking it might even happen, Obama is in fact threatening to veto this if it actually gets passed by the House and Senate. So for all of this obvious political maneuvering on the part of the Democrats, and especially Mary Landrieu, she might get it passed, but it's never becoming law as long as this guy's in the White House.
Yeah, you would think maybe the Landrieu campaign would have communicated with the White House to make sure if they're going to go forward with the strategy, that the White House wouldn't then suddenly shoot them back down. But then again, that would require the White House talking to the Senate, and as we've seen, that doesn't happen very often. But for all the political gamesmanship and maneuvering that the Landrieu camp is trying to do, this is a good sign for Republicans. Cassidy is up. He's having his own bill go forward. And Landrieu, as we said earlier this week, is going to do everything and the kitchen sink to try and keep her seat. She was one of four of the Democrats that voted against Harry Reid as Speaker yesterday. Again, she realizing all these things just a week after the election, which is which is just great timing. So it's a good sign for Republicans right now. It's a good sign for Bill Cassidy. Landrieu will probably still push this card. I guess she can still pull the, hey, at least I fought for it and I still have my clout on the Energy Committee. But as far as a tangible result goes, the president's not giving it to her. Even after Election Day, he's still toxic for red state Democrats.
And that takes us, it just gives us a little different wrinkle on here. The president, apparently, and this could be good for Republicans in 2016, although the country could be in horrific shape by then, the president just doesn't seem to care anymore. He's just going to go out there with every unpopular liberal interest group, whether it's crushing our economy through climate change, executive amnesty, killing the Keystone Pipeline just a week after he talked about things Republicans and Democrats can agree on, we should move on. He might get away with a lot of this stuff. It's horrible for the country, but Hillary Clinton's going to be in a really, really rough shape in 2016 if this persists.
Yeah, and one of the – I actually wrote a piece about this before Election Day, sort of how the environmentalist sort of segment of the Democratic Party has emerged as the main financial donors this cycle. Basically, they had turned off so many of their other constituencies that they had to run to the Tom Steyers and the Leave Conservation voters. And these groups are even starting to run ads that weren't even environmentally focused. They were basically the only Democratic supporters that were willing to throw money into this thing. So they were kind of speaking for a lot of different factions of the Democratic Party with their ads. And where I'm going with this is you would think after an election where they got absolutely slaughtered, it was a shellacking, whatever you want to call it, that the president would look back and say, all right, these Steyer guys, these environmentalists, they weren't very much help this cycle. But he's still sticking with them, even as Landrieu is, trying to get away from them. So, like you said, he's going to stick with, I guess, his guys, even if they're not necessarily the Democratic Party's guys.
Well, you're forgetting one important thing, Andrew. The environmentalists did a great job. They won by a landslide among the people that didn't vote.
Oh, right. Those two-thirds.
Yes.
You're right about that.
That's apparently who he was listening to.
And so. They speak for the trees, too. They have this Lorax-esque quality to them as well. So,
all right. On to the bad martini now, and we should probably sober up here pretty quickly because this is really bad. This is from the Associated Press. Militant leaders from the Islamic State group and al-Qaeda gathered at a farmhouse in northern Syria last week and agreed on a plan to stop fighting each other and work together against their opponents. A high-level Syrian opposition official and rebel commander have told the Associated Press. Basically, two decisions were reached here. First, to halt infighting between the al-Nusra Front and the Islamic State. And second, for the groups together to open up fronts against Kurdish fighters in a couple of new areas of northern Syria. So, good news, Andrew. The radicals who want to kill us all have decided to stop trying to kill each other.
They gathered at a farmhouse. It's not quite Appomattox, but... But ISIS and the Islamic State and everything going on in the Middle East has kind of fallen by the wayside in recent weeks, especially after the election. And so, in the same way that Russia and what's going on there has. But it's still something that people need to keep an eye on. It's something that is still going on. It's something that hasn't been addressed. And it'll be interesting to see sort of what happens now with the Republican Congress and getting congressional approval to act, whatever the strategy may be. I mean, I guess I'm putting the cart before the horse. We've been looking for a strategy as to how to best deal with it, and a lot of Republicans and even Democrats have taken issue with the way the president's approaching this. So I guess this is just sort of a reminder that A, this is going on, but B, it's not getting better.
Just had Tim Kaine, the Democrat from Virginia, today saying at this point he believes the war is illegal because Congress has yet to weigh in on it. The president has not asked for Congress to authorize the use of force, and neither chamber has bothered to take up the issue. So we'll see if that changes here in the lame duck or once Republicans control both chambers next year. But given the chatter we're hearing now from Martin Dempsey and some others about real boots on the ground, we're getting to the point where that doesn't even become a question anymore. They're going to have to take up the issue in a formal way, I would think. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And with all these other things happening in the background, one of the bigger stories of the week, at least in conservative media, everywhere else, who's Jonathan Gruber? But Jonathan Gruber, who is the MIT economist and the architect not only of Obamacare but also RomneyCare up in Massachusetts, drip, drip, drip throughout the week, all these videos where he quite arrogantly points out a number of things, including how the lack of transparency was critical to making sure the American people didn't understand the mandate was a tax, that young, healthy people would be paying for older, unhealthy people. Then we found out that it passed because of the American people's inability to understand economics. Then we learned today that Ted Kennedy was fleecing the government for $400 million a year, and it's really federal taxpayers that paid for the Massachusetts healthcare system. The Bush administration tried to take it back. Then Mitt Romney came begging for it, so George W. Bush gave it back to him. And so we got a whole mess. But over in Burma, where the president visited after his trip to China, Ed Henry of Fox News talking to Josh Earnest saying, wait a minute, we just heard from Jonathan Gruber that this whole lack of transparency was the key to getting this passed. You talked about how this was going to be the most transparent process ever. Get a load of this comment from Josh Earnest.
I'm not sure, frankly, Ed. The fact of the matter is the process associated with writing and passing and implementing the Affordable Care Act has been extraordinarily transparent. We all sat through many town hall meetings and discussions where this piece of legislation was vigorously debated by people on both sides. There was even a meeting that the president convened at Blair House with Republicans to discuss this policy proposal. It was, broadcast by C-SPAN. There was a steadfast commitment by this administration to make sure that people had good insight into the benefits of the law. The fact is, we spent a lot of time talking about one of those benefits, and that is the fact that individuals could receive tax credits from the federal government to make their health care costs more affordable. The fact is, I think it's actually Republicans who haven't been particularly transparent or even honest about the true impact of those.
Ah, so there you go, Andrew. The guy who put it together, don't believe a word he says, because we really were transparent. We even had one event on television, even though the Speaker of the House once said we had to pass it so we could find out what's in it. And the Senate bill was written by about two or three people behind closed doors. But for anyone who's still worried about this, it's the Republicans' fault for not being transparent.
Yeah, and that same, I guess, former speaker also, as we talked about yesterday, was saying that she knew so many Grubers. She didn't know this Gruber, despite citing his work in the past. And also, as a general rule, I guess, if you're going to claim something was transparent, don't brag that it was only broadcast on C-SPAN. I don't know how. How transparent that was. Earlier this week, I was saying when the first Gruber video came out and it was being discussed that, oh, if only this had come out earlier, Republican, before the midterms, just think about how much bigger a wave this could have been for Republicans. But the more and more there's sort of been this drip-drip element, we've been hearing more and more videos from Gruber. Actually, Republicans, and this actually might be sort of better for Republicans when it comes to taking on the Obamacare fight. Had it been pre-midterms, after the midterms, maybe people would sort of, you know, clap their hands together and said, all right, there, we dealt with it, the Gruber impact is over. But the fact that it's after it, the fact that Republicans are, you know, making their way towards Washington in the next couple of months and will have control of Congress and be able to actually put forward legislation, Gruber's sort of been the gift that keeps on giving for Republicans.
Absolutely right. Man, this is – I wonder how many there are left, because the guy who's finding these things is just a guy who lost his coverage or saw much higher premiums. He says there's a lot more coming here. He's been combing the internet, and it's obvious that Jonathan Gruber is not shy. So we
– Oh, yeah. I mean, he
could have days and days and weeks.
He's been proud. He's been going around boasting. I mean, you know, I guess in some ways he's been – one could argue he's been more transparent – post all this, you know, than he definitely was before, because he is not holding back when, you know, wherever he is doing it.
Ah, see, that's why gloating gets you in trouble right there. You just figure like, I got nothing to lose now. It's already law. What are you going to do to me? Well, we're about to find out. Andrew, thanks so much for filling in for Jim all week. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road.
It was a lot of fun. See you again.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Monday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us then for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.